What's up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about finding and testing out small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. But enough about the show. Let's get into our next game. Arafel is the game for this week's episode. Arafel is a 16-bit JRPG developed by Stegasoft Games in 2016. And the game originally came out on PC in 2016, and then in 2020, and a little into maybe about halfway, it finally came to PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and mobile platforms. But eventually it came out as the Enhanced Edition, and I think this came out somewhere in 2020, maybe near the end of the year, which is like a revamped version of the game. So that is the edition of the game that is the available one now. And to me, what drew me is it looked like a traditional JRPG, a turn-based combat game. It also seemed like a manageable time commitment because I looked it up. It's about 20, 25 hours, as we'll talk about. Definitely some tried and true battle mechanics with some surprising depth and uniqueness to it. And certainly inspiration, a little bit of Final Fantasy IV, Final Fantasy VI, Felseal, Arbiter's Mark, as well as Secret of Mana, although more for the aesthetic, I would say. The game released with a price point of $14.99, and I got it on sale, the Enhanced Edition, for $4.49 on PS5, so really nice deal there. And the game goes anywhere from 16 to 20 hours straight through, maybe 25 if you're being thorough. Certainly, it's a JRPG, so you might be leveling up, you might be grinding if you choose to. I am near the end of the game. I put in more than 20 hours, maybe closer to 21, and so I'm right there, and I feel like I've been thorough. I don't feel like I've had to grind too much. The game did have a physical release through Limited Run Games, and it was a combo release with another one of their games called Rise of the Third Power, and there were two editions, a standard and collectors. I found the collectors on eBay, and I actually bought it. I got a really nice price for it. And like we said, the game was developed by Stegasoft Games. This is a small team, I believe, out of DC. I think they're definitely US-based. And so they developed this game, and then, like I said, also after this, they did a game called Rise of the Third Power, which is pretty interesting because in terms of like finding out about this game, I actually bought Rise of the Third Power first because I was super interested in it. It looks pretty cool from a story perspective. It's set in around the 1930s, but I think it's like a fictional 1930s because obviously it has to do with World War II, Rise of the Third Power, and it looks super interesting. It has like pirates and it's also like turn-based. So pretty jazzed about that, but I didn't play it yet and I actually didn't know these two games were by the same developer. And so when I saw Arafel, everything looked cool. The review scores looked good, at least on PlayStation. And so I just pulled the trigger and I decided to jump in. Let's talk gameplay for Arafel. So like I said, this is a turn-based JRPG, so a lot of things that you might expect here if you've played these types of games before. So just some of the basics, it's a top-down view and you're walking around almost like in a grid spacing, so you can tell that you're in line with certain things. I've been using the D-pad to move around. Apparently that was not an option in the regular version. At least that's what I saw on maybe like Reddit or something. And so I've been using that in this enhanced version, making it feel very traditional to me. I try to use the joysticks to do this, but it doesn't feel right. So using the D-pad is definitely recommended. And you're walking around and you can interact with things. You can talk to people. You can open doors, read signs, all the typical things that you might expect. And you can open up the menu. Again, very typical. You can look at your items, you can save the game, you can craft things, upgrade things, and you can look at your quests, which is good. This game does track quests. And so you're traversing around this game, and primarily you're doing it on foot. You're just moving through. The map is kind of screen to screen, but it does vary in terms of the size of the screen. Like it does scroll side to side or up and down, depending on how big that particular area is. But it's not put like that on the map. It's not like screen to screen like squares. It's just kind of open areas. So you're moving around and you can be in towns, you can be in sort of these wilderness areas, but anytime you go onto a new screen, it does have a name, but it's treated the same. So it's not like you're on the world map and then you go to a town and you see this tiny town and you walk into it. No, every kind of area just has its own kind of similar scaling and you're just going screen to screen. And then if you happen to go into a town, it'll just pop that name up when you walk onto the next screen. You'll also be walking around, be able to go into people's homes, into caves, into different buildings. So they might have just an opening like in the side of the rock, or it might be a door. While you're walking around, you'll be able to do different things. You'll be able to jump if there is an opportunity to do so. So it might just be like small gaps in like bridges. You'll be able to do that if there's like a space in the stairs. You'll see like maybe three spaces of stairs that are going up and down. And then you'll see a gap in the middle one and you just go up to it and you press X and your character will jump. It's not something that you can do sort of on command or like jump over enemies or things like that. It's only when it's warranted and your character will just kind of automatically do it. And similar thing, if you come across a space where like there's something that you need to duck under, your character can crouch and you're like crawling. You can do this at any time, but there's only a couple instances where you're going to need to actually do it. And you'll see it if there's like an opening or a door that's like smaller than a regular door. Like you'll clearly need to crouch to go into there. Your character will also be able to swim. So when you come across like a small pond or body of water that is like on the same level as the ground you're at, your character will just move on to it and kind of do like a diving motion in it. What's interesting and minorly annoying is that things like obstructions just in the general road or in the area that you're trying to walk on, like a rock or something like that, or if you're at like the edge of an area, or like you can't go into certain water, or there's a different level, or just anytime there's walking space that's not available or is available, it's kind of unclear and inconsistent. Like especially when you're in caves and things like that, you'll see like these weird ridges, or like it looks like there's a mound or a rock, but you're actually just able to walk right over it. And then other times when you see something similar, you can't walk over it. So it's just inconsistent, and that can be a little annoying. Progressing in this game is pretty intuitive. It is quest-based, so you will have a main quest that's sort of at the top of your quest list and I think has like an exclamation point to let you know. And then you'll slowly start to accrue side quests or different things that you can do that are going to log under it. And it'll tell you if it's completed. It'll kind of black out. But you'll be able to find a lot of these by going around and talking to people. And it should be fairly obvious when you can get a quest, because there'll be like a question mark or an exclamation point over a character telling you that either like you can get a new quest from this person, or this is like who you need to go to like finish a quest or is part of a quest. So having those exclamation points and question marks over characters is very helpful. And so with a quest-based system, there's a little bit of open roam and there's a little bit of times where you're gated or can only do certain things. Especially early on, there's going to be gated time where you can't go to certain places, because you'll see that the world is pretty open. Like if you're on a screen that's in the map where there's like just land all around it, you should be able to go in kind of any direction. But depending on where you are in the story, your character might be very focused on doing the main quest. And so early on, you'll get a lot of instances where like you try to go in other directions and your character will say like, I can't go this way now. I need to go do this thing. And so that's sort of how it can gate you at times. Again, this happens more so early in the game. And advancing the main quest is something that you're going to do a lot with just major battles, especially in the second half of the game. It's just battle after battle. And something that should be a little familiar to our Final Fantasy veterans, a lot of times you're going to have party members coming in and out, especially early in the game, very Final Fantasy 4 and 6. You will have four main party members that you will have in the game. So it's not like you're going to have like a large cast of characters that are in your party swapping in and out. It's just like whether certain of those four people are in or out at a given time. But I would say eventually, like halfway through the game, you have all four people until the end, basically. There is a map and there is fast travel. And the fast travel works point to point, so if you get to any fast travel point, it's like you discover it, and then you can warp to any fast travel point you've accessed before. This isn't something that you have to acquire a power for or anything like that. It's just the first time you see a point, it tells you, like, hey, you can travel between fast travel points. And it's really nice because these fast travel points will show up on the map, so you can get a vague sense of where they are. The map itself is kind of vague. At least early on, I thought it was very big and very confusing, but eventually you do become attuned to locations or how to traverse parts of the map that seem a little vague in the beginning. And then beyond that, you're going to be doing a lot of finding, collecting, and foraging upgrade materials, and that's really going to fuel at least your progression as a character. And these you're going to get as battle rewards, you might find in chests. As you're exploring, you might get them as rewards for quests, or you might get them from just foraging in the world. This is something that you're going to do a lot, and you'll see these items just on the ground, and you'll be able to forage them once, but once you forage them, they don't come back. So let's talk about your characters. Each of your characters will have four stats that govern multiple aspects of your character. So you have attack, defense, agility, and wisdom. So attack is going to be your physical and magical attack. So a lot of these characters are going to have physical attacks and magic attacks from some of their skills. Your defense governs your ability to take damage, but also how many hit points you have. So that kind of goes hand in hand. Agility is interesting. Obviously, your speed, where you'll be at in the battle order, but also your ability to crit. So your crit percentage. And then wisdom is going to be linked to how much MP you have, as well as how quickly it regenerates. And I believe also, like, when you crit, how much extra damage it will do. And so anytime your character levels up, so anytime that you win a battle or complete a quest, your character's going to get experience. Anytime that you level up, you're going to get 10 points for your character to spread out among these four stats. And so these are going to accrue very much. So I'm late in the game. I'm at level like 35 or 37 with some of my characters. And so some of them have numbers for each of these four stats that are over 100. So it does get pretty high and it does accrue pretty quickly. Each of these characters that you're going to have are going to have sort of vague class distinctions. Like one of them's an archer, one of them's a fighter, one's a healer, one's a sorcerer. As you're leveling them up and you're putting points into these different stats, they're also going to gradually learn different moves. Now, each of them only has six, so at a certain point, you're not learning any more skills or moves. But early in the game, you're slowly accruing these extra skills that can open up their development. Each character will have five things equipped, like one for each hand. So it might be a sword and a shield, or like a wand and a harp or something like that. And then it's like helmet, armor, and then some kind of like talisman or artifact. What's interesting is that whatever equipment they start with, you're not going to find new equipment. In fact, what you're going to do is you're going to upgrade that equipment. So each character is going to have different things that they have equipped, but you're not out finding items to change in and out of. You're actually finding things to upgrade with. And so upgrading is a lot of what you're going to be doing. So you can upgrade your skills and your equipment. Your skills can be upgraded each move two different ways. So like we said, there are six skills max that each character can have. So each of these moves is going to be able to be upgraded in terms of like the potency of the skill, as well as like a different classification. So these are really interesting and they take specific items that you will find. And so we talked about how you find a lot of items. You might get them as rewards from quests or beating bosses. You might find them in a chest, and you also might be able to buy them from certain merchants. The different skills that each character is going to have is going to be different depending on their class, but a lot of them do have pretty balanced skill sets. Some of these might heal people, some of them might do damage to individual enemies or multiple enemies, some of them might buff your party members, some of them might debuff the enemies, and then as you upgrade them, they'll get extra effects, or you might augment them in different ways, depending on what you choose to do. And your equipment, like I said, each character has 5 equipment things. Each of them can be upgraded 4 times. So once you get all of a character's equipment to the 4th level, that's maxing out that character, basically. And you need to find a lot of materials in order to do this. And again, you get materials as rewards for things. You can find them. You're going to be foraging a lot of these materials that you need to upgrade your equipment, as well as being able to buy them. And these are just going to provide basic increases to stat boosts. So some of the weapons might, you know, give you 50 extra damage or whatever, or 20 extra damage, or boost your defense by 5 or 10 or whatever. And then as you upgrade to further levels, they're going to give you bigger boosts to those stats. You'll also come across relics in this game. I would say there's somewhere between like 10 and 15 maybe. I feel like I've gotten most of them, and these are just items that you either find or buy that will just provide like static stat boost to all of your party members. So you might find a relic that gives +8 HP to all party members, and as long as you have it in your inventory, your party members will get that. So you're going to accrue a lot of things like this, and it might not just be that. There's one that I just found that's like anytime you use a potion in battle, like there's a chance that it won't get consumed. And of course, a lot of ways to get these things are to buy them. So you're going to find shops primarily in towns. So each town is definitely going to have one or multiple shops that might classify different items, like upgrade materials, or you can buy potions. There is one particular merchant that is like a traveling merchant. So you'll see that character a lot, like even within dungeons or caves. And again, you'll be able to buy materials for upgrading. You'll be able to buy potions. You'll also be able to potentially buy recipes, which will allow you to craft different potions or higher level potions. And so potions will be a thing, certainly in battle, being able to heal. So let's get into the battle component, because this is a JRPG. So you're going to have turn-based battle, just what you might expect from a JRPG. You'll see the order of the characters at the top left, and depending on different buffs or debuffs to speed, this order might change or stay the same for the entire battle, but it's going to go in turns. So it'll go through everyone who has a turn, and then it'll start the turn over pretty much in the same order again. And when it's your character's turn, they have all day. You don't have to, it's not like an active time battle like Final Fantasy 9 or 6. And each character is going to have different options. They can just attack with their regular attack. They can use a skill. They can use an item. They can defend. And no matter what you choose, this will take that character's turn. If you want to use a skill, it's going to need MP or magic points. And so depending on how many you have in your max, or how many, if you've used some already, you might or might not be able to use certain skills. But each turn, at the beginning, all of your characters will recover a certain amount of MP back, and that's going to be linked to their wisdom stat, how much they recover each turn. Enemies are going to vary, certainly in how many of them there are and what they can do. So I'd say anywhere from 1 to 6 enemies is going to be the max. And each enemy is going to have an array of moves, maybe like 2 to 3 different moves. It might just be straight attacks. It might be to buff themselves or another enemy, or to debuff you or all of your characters. Or they might have like a charge up move that would take a turn, and a little meter shows up, which is indicating like a big attack is coming. And the same goes for bosses. And sometimes the bosses are going to be one giant enemy. Sometimes it might be multiple entities or multiple appendages that are attached, and the appendages or the extra things around them might be buffing it or kind of doing different things. But regardless of if it's multiple enemies or multiple appendages, they're all going to have individual turns in the turn order. Some of the bosses might have like waves of enemies coming in and out. Some of the bosses might summon extra enemies. So different things will definitely come across you. And so in battle, you're definitely going to take damage. If one of your characters gets their hit points down to 0, they will be down and they will have an injury. And you can revive them in battle, but they will still have the injury icon. And these can stack, so you can have one of your characters like die multiple times and keep reviving them. Anytime they get the injury debuff, it means that their stats are kind of decreased until it is removed. And primarily, you're going to remove them by resting at an inn. There are other ways to cure an injury, But this is something that you want to keep your eye on because, for the most part, when you're going in and out of battle, all of your HP and MP are going to reset after your battle. So you don't have to worry about healing in between battles. However, if any of your characters went down and you revived them, they are going to maintain that injury until you rest at the inn. So you want to be aware of that. If someone is injured, find a way to alleviate that as soon as possible, because for the next battle or next few battles, their stats are going to be decreased, so they're not going to be doing as much damage as you would like them to do. Also, at the end of battle, if you have a character that ends battle being down, like their HP is zero, they won't get any XP. So be aware of that. You might want to revive them before the battle's over. And in general, let's talk pacing. So in terms of the exploration aspect of this, like I said, you're going to be able to roam openly for the most part. And I would say it's a pretty consistent amount. So you're going to be able to roam and go in different directions and maybe find different screens to go off of, find items, do sort of mini quests or, you know, maybe like a mini boss thing where you get a treasure chest that has a certain item or certain upgrade materials. You'll definitely be doing side quests that'll take you in different directions that might be not where the main quest is. For the most part, the side quests that you receive, I would say most of them you receive in the first half of the game, but you are not able to complete them right away, whether it's because the battle levels are too high that you have to do to complete the side quests, or if it's just not accessible, it's very far away and you can't get there yet. I like that, but I was hoping that maybe there'd be like a few more rounds of side quests later in the game, but for the most part, you do get most of them in the first half of the game. The majority of what fuels exploration is going to be foraging. Like I said, you're going to be doing this a lot, and you're going to be upgrading your character in both their skills and their equipment as much as you possibly can, and this is going to be fueled by finding upgrade materials. As you're moving along the main quest, you're going to sometimes be in these like dungeons. It could just be like a cave or like a sequence that you have to go off of that's pretty gated depending on where you are in the story. Sometimes these are going to have some puzzles. Sometimes it might be like going to this corner and hitting this switch or unlocking this, and now you have to go to the other side. I would say that in the middle of the game, it reaches like its most innovation in terms of the puzzles or different things that you're doing. But outside of that, it's pretty kind of run of the mill. Upgrading your character has an interesting pacing to it. I feel like from the beginning to like the middle of the game, it was a really nice steady pace of like upgrading your character's equipment or finding ways to upgrade their skills, and then also getting new skills as you're leveling up your characters. But by mid-game, you have all the moves and all the skills that your characters are going to get. So I like some of the later stuff where you're picking between options of how to upgrade your skills. But for late game, I feel like it kind of just got a little stale, especially when it comes to the battle. So I do feel like, again, like the first half of the game, a nice linear challenge increase. Even into late into the game, the battles were a bit challenging, but eventually the strategy just becomes mostly the same, depending on if the enemy is like one singular enemy, like a big boss, or like there are multiple entities. You really just kind of know how you're going to strategize for the most part. And especially in the second half of the game, a lot of boss battles, like sometimes consecutively, like you'll do a boss battle and then you'll move like two screens and then it's another boss battle and then another boss battle. And that's fine. But it does get a little old because, again, second half of the game, you're not really getting any different mechanics. You're not really getting any new skills, and your strategy is going to pretty much be mostly the same. And it's interesting because the game tries to warn you when there's a point of no return. But honestly, this game uses that phrase so many times. Like sometimes you'll hit a point of no return in a dungeon and you're like, oh, should I go? And really it's just a boss battle where you can return from. Like it's not like you'll go to a different area or something like that. So at a certain point, it kind of loses its meaning and I got a little annoyed by it. And I actually started to just ignore it because I figured it was just going to be like a little cutscene and then a battle. And then I could just go back to exploring where I was. For the most part with battles, you can avoid them. So there's no random encounters like traditional JRPGs. It's kind of the ones where you see the enemies walking around on the screen. So you can avoid them and they do kind of walk in a random pattern. But if you see an opening, like you can clearly just walk through and not run into any of them. But you can kill all the enemies that are on a particular screen. But if you go screen to screen and come back, it will reset just the general enemies that are on the screen. So this can be good if you want to level grind. I do not feel like it was necessary for me to level grind at all. There is a trophy to reach all of your characters to level 50, so that's something that you could do, but again, I'm like near the end of the game. I have my characters at like level 35, 36, and I feel like I'm just blazing through battles, and I'm on hard mode, by the way, which we'll talk about in a second, with accessibility. So there are difficulty options. There are four tiers of difficulty. I'm on the third one at hard. There is a trophy for beating all the battles on the fourth one, which is expert. And so I didn't do that, and I'm kind of miffed because I wanted to get the Platinum Trophy as I was playing through this game, but I don't think I'm going to because I would have to replay the game, I think, and put it on Expert. I do feel like I could handle Expert, but at this point I'm just kind of getting through the game and interested to see where it finishes. Like I said, I'm playing on hard mode. I probably got a game over like three or four times, probably more early on, like when I was doing battles and I only had one or two characters. I do feel like there is a fair challenge, at least in the first half to two thirds of the game. But late in the game, some of the battles were close. But honestly, with just the strategy that I had employed and the different skills that I had leveled up, I was able to get through a lot of tough battles using reviving items and things like that. So never really got tested too much. I know, at least with some of the side quests and late in the game with some of the battles, there might be some boss battles that are very difficult or have enemies that are very high HP, but I feel like for the most part, I'll be pretty well equipped. And the other major thing is that you can save at any time. This is awesome. For anyone who's played a lot of JRPGs, especially games like your Final Fantasies or your Breath of Fire, like I'm thinking old Super Nintendo games where you had to find a save point or get to a town to find a save point, you can save it at any time. Love that. I feel like that's very player friendly. And so shout out to those saves. Let's talk about the vibe of Arafel, and let's start with the visuals. So this is 16-bit pixelated. You have the little sprites that are definitely reminiscent of your old Final Fantasies, of your Secrets of Mana. The menus are pretty much what you would expect. It's like a blue background with the white box outline. The environment's very green. There's a lot of forest area, the grass, the trees, a lot of waterfalls, water pools. So obviously you'll be diving into water pools. Again, reminds me a lot of Secret of Mana. I feel like just from an aesthetic standpoint, definitely not in gameplay. You'll be climbing ladders, going across bridges. Some of the caves you'll be going into are going to be a bit darker, obviously, but more brown and rocky. Some obstruction confusion with the ground, especially in caves. The different levels that you're on, the edges, where you can and can't go. So sometimes you'll be walking and just come across an obstruction and, you know, won't realize it until you can't move anymore. So that visual confusion can be a bit frustrating. And when you go into towns, it's honestly, if you didn't have the name of the town pop up in the top left corner, I wouldn't know I was in a town because the terrain is pretty much the same. It's like forest. And then you'll have like where there are shops or inns. It's just like a cutout in the rock that looks like a cave, but is actually like an inn. Indicators are a big thing. So anything that can be foraged will sparkle and you'll definitely get used to seeing certain things. But if you just give it a minute and you're unsure, like you'll see it sparkle and you just go over and either they pick it up off the ground or they like pickaxe it out of the rock or something like that. You will see fish swimming in water. And since you can jump in the water, you can go up to where the fish is and see what kind of pattern they're revolving in and then go to the space where they're about to go. And then your character will actually be able to dive down and grab the fish and then you'll have that item. And this also goes for sometimes in the water, you'll see like pools of ripples, and that means that there's something there. Typically, it's just coins, but your character will dive down and pick that up as well. In battle, the different buffs and debuffs that are on your characters will have different battle icons. This can be helpful, but also you can at any time, when it's any of your character's turn, go down to the bottom of the menu and click status, and then go to any character, and it'll show you like what the status icon means. What's really nice for someone like me who is colorblind is that there is a colorblind mode, and I think I know what it does, but it is definitely helpful. But even more so than that, you have the option to change the cursor color in the menus. This was such a game changer for me because a lot of, especially when you upgrade the different equipment of characters, like what is available to upgrade or what you don't have all the materials for, can change the color of the words. And so if you change the cursor color, you can get a better differentiation and you can go from like blue to red to purple to yellow. So I really like this. This made it very helpful for me to try and figure out where the cursor was on the menus, but really shout out to colorblind mode and visual accessibility options. The map is very large and awkward. In the first like 5 hours of the game, I was just completely overwhelmed by the map. I thought it was vaguely confusing and not helpful, but eventually I start to got the meaning of seeing some things. For the most part, if it's just like a large body of land, it's not going to be helpful. But where I found it helpful was like if there were bridges or water bodies, it was pretty accurate in terms of where the bridges were on the map and in the actual game. And so that helped as kind of like a gauge or a guidepost to help me get to where I was trying to go. In terms of audio, I love the music in this game. I really do. I was disappointed because there's no vinyl available for it because I definitely would have gotten that. But very traditional in terms of JRPG. Really a lot of nostalgia feelings just listening to this music. Definitely some tracks that hit home, being sort of like longing and emotional. Sometimes they use harps or strings or woodwinds, so a nice array of instruments. And a lot of like the more battle oriented or like, you know, get on and get going reminded me a lot of Felseal Arbiter's Mark. If you've played that game, you can definitely hear some of the comparisons there. And in terms of themes and settings, very traditional. So you have knights, you have magic, you have elves, castles. So what you might expect from, again, a Final Fantasy IV, Final Fantasy VI, kind of that medieval feeling. Your character is like the main character, the hero of the story, kind of this like unknown bumpkin falls in backwards and becomes like the person who the fate of the world rests on. And then other kinds of things, tropes that you might expect, like an ancient society, you're dealing with the end of the world, the threat, and a couple different instances of maybe like betrayal or who is this person really? Even though you don't know like the full history of things, it is interesting how these sort of situations unfold. There are vampires in the game, and they're like one of the main factions that you're going to deal with and interact with. Definitely felt some Buffy moments in many different instances, not just because of the content, but also your main character and their relationship and how they sort of get branded. And just characters in general, I feel like they have some depth. I mean, there's your four characters and then maybe like somewhere between 5 and 10 other characters in the game that actually make an impact. But I do feel like they do have some depth. The relationships between them are interesting. The history as it unfolds, how you figure out their sort of relation to each other. And some of them will undergo some growth, I feel. I like a lot of the dialogue. It's sort of fun and silly, but I like the personalities of the different characters. They definitely stand out. Some tropes with things. Overall, I would say nothing new or revolutionary in terms of characters or development, but overall just nice. And I feel like their development, their growth was just making them likable to me, albeit something that I've probably seen before, but nonetheless pretty self-aware. And so nice characters, charming, and that really helped with making this a fun experience.
Thank you.
All right, let's wrap up the conversation about Arafel. So to me, this was a lovely, nostalgic, bite-sized JRPG itch-scratching experience. I really loved the music, the visuals. I feel like the pacing was very streamlined in terms of the battle, the exploration, the story. Pretty simple systems, especially of upgrades. Not having to get new equipment is something that might alleviate a lot of growing pains for people who have played JRPGs over the years, you know, comparing equipment or which one is better. This one has this ability, but this one upgrades this stat. So not having to worry about any of that stuff. And I will say there is some depth and uniqueness to the systems and the way the skills work and how you upgrade them. And I did enjoy that. But ultimately, I feel like past halfway in the game, it gets very rinse and repeat, especially with battle. Battle becomes a little stale, I feel, from midpoint to the end of the game. I feel like most genre vets could probably play this on expert mode and, you know, not even really feel too much of a challenge. Again, I played through on hard, died a couple times in early in the game. But what kept me invested was the characters and the charm and the story, trying to figure out what is going on or get to the bottom of it. Again, nothing revolutionary, but something that sort of kept me hooked, as well as just the digestibility of the game, knowing that it's under 30 hours, under 25 hours to get through this, and trying to do that full circle story. It really does come off pretty strong and makes for a nice experience. In terms of value, I feel like 15 is right on for this game and any kind of game like this. You're definitely not going to get similar quality, depth, and digestibility anywhere in a JRPG. I feel like it's very difficult to do all of that and still have sort of that epic or that journey experience where you're going on this long adventure that's not that long, but you are having character development, you are seeing growth, even though it tapers out in a couple points, especially with battle. But I feel like 15 is right on. If you find it under $10, I feel like that's a steal. I got it for under $5. Tremendous value. I got a ton of value out of this game. And again, I really liked my experience. And I feel like with this development team, you could definitely see the inspiration and the heart that went into sort of making this a love letter to old JRPGs. I am very excited to play their other game, Rise of the Third Power. It looks like it builds on a lot of the things they did here, but has some very interesting and unique sort of story elements or like where they were going or the setting. So I'm very excited to play that. And I'm very glad that I played this game. So if you're someone who's never played a JRPG, I feel like this is a great entry point to this genre. Or if you're someone who loved the old Final Fantasy games or Dragon Warrior games or any kind of old JRPGs like that, this is definitely a love letter and a source of nostalgia for that. So if you're someone that hasn't played those games in a while, maybe because it's too much of an hour investment, I think this is going to be a nice compromise for you. I feel like you'll have some similar criticisms that I've had, but if you don't have the time to put in 100 plus hours, I feel like this is going to hit home for a lot of old JRPG fans. And so I do recommend this game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.